Despite implementing multiple price hikes last year, Hershey was recently portrayed as the latest victim of ever-increasing inflation. Pushing back against this narrative, The Guardian noted that a closer look at the company's financials suggest a vastly different reality, adding Hershey's net profits spiked 62% between the fourth quarters in 2019 and 2021. Its operating margin widened, and it recently rewarded shareholders with $200 million in stock buybacks. Still, customers will pay even more for candy bars in 2022 as Hershey aims to even higher profits. Pricing will be an important lever for us this year and is expected to drive most of our growth, CEO Michelle Bach told investors. The executives of Kroger and other companies have similarly boasted that inflation is good for business because it can camouflage price gouging. The COVID-19 pandemic, a supply chain crunch inseparable from decades of neoliberal globalization, and Russia-Ukraine crisis have created a smokescreen, according to Lindsay Owens, executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative, which has drawn attention to the relationship between corporate greed and rising prices. Owens told The Guardian that gray, nebulous area is fertile ground for companies right now, and you hear about it in their earnings calls. Inflation itself is the opportunity. Oxford University economist Martin Schmalz said that the newspaper's analysis reveals a massive transfer of wealth from the working class, which is paying higher prices as consumers, to the investor class reaping the financial benefits. Recent survey data indicates that Americans are aware that companies are unnecessarily shifting increased costs onto customers. A Data for Progress poll released in February found that a majority of U.S. voters believe that large corporations are taking advantage of the pandemic to raise prices unfairly on consumers and increase profits. Companies have access to massive capital, George Pickers, an analyst at Bespoke Investment, told The Guardian, adding they could have 1 or 2 years that are more painful. Not even more painful, just less profitable for their investors, and they are choosing not to. The newspaper reported, however, that when Target and Walmart declined to pass an all inflationary cost on to customers ahead of the holiday season, an investor revolt ensued and their shares temporarily plummeted. Owen said that shareholders are not interested in seeing anyone be cautious with price increases, and in some cases they are saying, let's throttle supply, let's see how far we can take this. Progressive lawmakers have taken steps to rein in profiteering amid the global pandemic and the Russia-Ukraine crisis. Last month, Senator Bernie Sanders introduced the Ending Corporate Greed Act, which aims to put a stop to corporate price gouging by imposing a 95% tax on the windfall profits of major companies. Its path through Congress remains unclear.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. I am a Muslim. Islamite. Islamite. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station. Choo 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 choo. It's the Youth Station for you. I'm your humble host, Muzaffar Haider.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners all over the world. I, Zainab Sadat, have the privilege of being your host today.
It's a very good pleasure and an honor to have you here, dear
Thank
sister.
Thank you.
I don't know, I've had some bad experiences in the past where I've put my trust into people, but then they've ended up hurting me or damaging something in our world and stuff. I wanted to just throw this question at you. Has that ever happened to you, by the way?
Definitely it has happened. You know, definitely we all have witnessed situations where we have trusted people who we should not have trusted at all. And those people just didn't came up with what we expected and they have just betrayed us. Mm. They have just broke our hearts. And that's the case. I think it's also almost impossible for a person not to have such an experience. Mm. That's quite normal. And the important point is that you must know how to deal with such occasions, with such situations, and most importantly, not to trust people at all.
Shaitan himself, when he approached Adam and told him to eat from the tree, he doesn't come and say, "I'm the Shaitan, I'm going to mislead you. So listen to me." No, he lied to him. He lied to him and said, "I'm a sincere advisor to you." Yeah. Right? And so this is the way that the evildoers work in the world. Now, sometimes we end up being the evildoers ourselves. Right? It's not just evil people like murderers or, you know, it's not just terrible people. Normal people sometimes fall into satanic traps.
Yes.
And that's what we have to be very, very much aware of in this dunya, that we need to be cautious of everybody. That sounds too mistrusting.
Yes, and in case, I guess, the more faith we have in God, the more distant we would stand from people's promises. You know, it's a quite good thing in Islam that, and I like it so much because God has supported us. God is the one who can do anything for us. And in case we have any wish, we can ask God anything and he would just give us. Why should we rely on other people? Why should we ask other people? And I really try hard to not to rely on people. But as you said, it's the act of shaitan rajim. Mm. And that's not what we can do. It's our human nature to trust other people. I know somebody who was deceived by the false promise of somebody else who the other person was so powerful. He had such a good job and he promised the person that it would provide him some good job and don't worry and such things. Mm. And the person, although he was so much talented and hardworking, he just relied on that person.
Oh,
he just waited and waited and waited. And I can see that the person is not young anymore. Such a
that
promise has ruined his character. He's not that much energetic. He does not believe in himself anymore. He lost his self-esteem. And just waiting for the other person to find him some good job, for example. And although I've heard that that person has regretted what he has done and he has just realized that his trust in other people was his mistake in his life and he just regretted and asked God to help him. But, you know, I saw the damage in him and I think that is not something that can be fixed. That has remained in his soul and I think it won't disappear until maybe at the end of his life. And I take this person as a good example of not relying on people, not trusting people, because I saw what happened to him.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
There's also loads of examples of sisters being taken advantage of online by men who they trust in the world, you know,
yes,
through like forums and social media sites. And there are some really, really devastating horror stories of sisters out there, you know, them getting pictures taken of them and then those pictures being used to blackmail the sisters.
Right.
And so then the families, in order to save their own honor and stuff, they will even pay loads of money to the aggressors online. Heavy stories. They're really, really sad. But I do feel that we need to remind everybody out there that this world that we live in is not always such a nice place to be. It is a place where people, if you trust them, they may take advantage of you and really, really damage you.
And unfortunately, recently, we hear lots of such stories. And I guess, I don't know, maybe the seeds of shaitan are so much represented that lots of people are just trying to abuse other people. I don't know why.
Neither do I. No.
Yes, I'm not blaming those people. Mm. I think I must put the blame on myself as a human being for trusting them, for, you know, neglecting what God has commanded me. Mm. God has commanded me not to trust other people, not to rely on other people.
Yeah.
As I said, again, I want to put an emphasis on it that we must, anything we want, we must ask God. God is provide us with not only the things we want. Mm. If we just ask God from the bottom of our heart, He would give us not only what we want, but also more and more and better and more precious things.
There's a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam. He says there are five things that you should try your hardest to acquire. And he says the first of them is to have hope only in Allah.
Yes.
Have hope only in Allah. Now, that's easier said than done. When you actually only have hope in Allah, you only trust Allah and those who are connected to Allah, like the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam. Imam Khomeini, one of the outstanding features about Imam Khomeini was the fact that he trusted in Allah.
Yeah.
Like, he really believed in the promises of Allah.
Mm-hmm.
Other people can make you promises, but then they break those promises. And by the way, the shaitan does precisely this. Right, the Quran, when it's talking about the shaitan, it says, on the day of judgment, shaitan himself, Iblis himself, is going to say, Allah promised you a promise, and He fulfilled that promise. I also made you a promise, but I broke my promise.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's so easy for somebody to just make a promise and break it. But the point is that when you trust in Allah, He never breaks His promise. But when it comes to friends, I'd say, there was this very interesting verse in Surah Rum. Allah says in the Quran, Allah does not fail in His promise. But most human beings just don't understand.
They don't believe that. Yes.
When Allah has made you a promise, that's the first thing that we should believe in. But unfortunately, we end up trusting others. But what about friends, sister? You have so many friends or close family who you have kind of friend relationship with them. What about when you trust them? Should you trust them?
Yes, you must come to know your people. I personally have some characters, features I want from people around me. I choose my friends based on these characteristics, based on these features. I almost try to choose people who are pious.
Mm. What do you mean by pious?
Those people who are afraid of God. The literal meaning of piety is those people who are afraid of God. Those people who are afraid of, in fact, disobedience of God.
Sorry, I'm not trying to be, but how do you test that? How do you know if somebody's...
the first thing is that you must not trust them at the very first point. You must not trust them as soon as they walk in the door and you just meet them. You must think about their behavior. That's the way we can recognize whether they are pious or not. Mm. At least for me.
And now for me is when they pray Salah on time.
Yes, yes, their salah, their saying of prayers, and whether they lie or not, that's an important feature. I try to check whether they are liars or not, whether they, as you said, about their prayers, what's their general religious idea. You know, religious people, although there are exceptions, although there are people who seem to be so much religious, it is still a good criteria for me to choose a person.
Mm-hmm.
being religious does not that mean just acting to be religious. No, it's not. I do not intend the actions they do in order to seem in a way, in a certain way. I'm just talking about their manners. And
I like the fact that you brought up the lying thing.
Yes.
Because I don't know about you, but when you find out that somebody has told a lie, your immediate reaction is to deny the fact that they've told a lie.
And unfortunately, I personally start to think that he or she is not a good person. As soon as I see him or her lying.
No, but lying is very bad.
Yes, it's very bad.
Do you know, sister, there's a hadith from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Somebody comes to the Imam alayhi salam and asks him, is it possible for somebody to commit such and such sin and be your Shia? The Imam thinks about it and he says, yes, it's possible if they repent, etc., etc. Then they say, what if they're even worse crime? What if they drink alcohol? Is it still possible for them to be a Shia? The Imam says, yes, if they repent. Then they say, what if they commit murder? You know, what if they commit theft? What if they commit this? And the Imam's just saying, yes, yes, it's possible, it's possible. Then he says, is it possible for somebody to lie and be your Shia? The Imam says no.
That's the point.
Right? Lying is terrible. I don't blame you. If you catch somebody lying, then they're really dangerous and you should avoid them. And you should definitely never trust them.
Change your mind about those people who are liars.
More than off the back of lying as well, ghibah.
Yes, backbiting.
You know, we've been taught that one who backbites to you will backbite about you.
Yes.
You know, so if somebody is backbiting somebody in front of your back, like in front of you, but behind their back, rest assured that same person is going to do backbiting of you behind your back.
Yes, and that's an important point in the criteria for choosing a friend. Maybe sometime we want to, some other episodes, we want to talk about the criteria for choosing an appropriate friend. Okay, for now.
Yep, that's all we have time for. Unfortunately, we've been talking about when and where and why we should trust certain people and not trust others. From myself, from Sister Zainab, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my alpha and omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, a light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my alpha and omega, my protector and my maker, because of
you. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
in the limelight.
The number of evictions sought by landlords is climbing back to pre-pandemic levels in cities across the U.S. as wage growth continues to lag behind inflation and millions of people struggle with the rising cost of basic necessities. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Mike Ludwig, journalist. This article is published under the heading Evictions are climbing to pre-pandemic levels in cities across the U.S. Here's the story. The number of evictions sought by landlords is climbing back to pre-pandemic levels in cities across the U.S. as wage growth continues to lag behind inflation and millions of people struggle with the rising cost of basic necessities. An estimated 35% of respondents to U.S. Census Bureau's latest household pulse survey said they are either very or somewhat likely to leave their home in the next 2 months due to an eviction. Only about 11% said they applied for and received rental assistance through federally funded programs, typically administered by states and cities, which are charged with distributing around $46.5 billion in aid to landlords and tenants. A larger pulse survey found that nearly 25% of renter households are slightly confident or not confident at all in their ability to pay the next month's rent. These federal figures are just estimates extrapolated from surveys, but if they are anywhere close to reality, a growing wave of evictions could displace millions of people as the cost of living spikes. Until recently, employment gains and support from temporary pandemic aid packages shielded the working class from the harms of inflation, according to Sean Fresmed, a senior policy fellow at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. However, corporations continue to raise prices on consumers, and Congress failed to extend safety net programs such as the expanded child tax credit that kept millions of people from going hungry last year. He said in a statement recently, but it is now clear that corporate greed is hitting the working class head on. According to the Census Bureau, just over one in three adults, about 34%, now report difficulty paying for the usual household expenses, the highest level we've seen since early 2021. Across the six states and 31 cities tracked by Princeton University's Eviction Lab, landlords filed for more than 10,247 evictions in the last week alone. In Texas cities, Houston, Dallas, and Fort Worth, landlords filed for 37,000 evictions in the first 3 months of the year, according to a Texas Tribune report based on the same data. In Dallas, eviction filings plummeted during the height of the pandemic to as few as six per week, but filings skyrocketed after local and federal eviction moratoriums were lifted months ago. More than 1,000 filings were recorded in Dallas during 1 week this month alone. Similar reports are surfacing in cities across the country as pandemic social aid dries up. And the housing crisis goes beyond eviction, thanks in part to a broken social safety net and low wages for workers across multiple top industries. Nearly one in three U.S. households can only afford to pay $600 in rent per month or less, resulting in many families grappling with crowded or dangerous housing conditions. The United States was facing a housing and eviction crisis long before the pandemic forced businesses to shut down and put millions of people out of work. Even before the pandemic, many were charged rents they could not afford, according to housing justice groups. Prior to 2020, more than 3.6 million evictions were filed each year in the U.S. Falling behind on rent can be a slippery slope toward losing a home, especially in red states with few legal protections for renters. When facing an eviction, only about 3% of tenants are represented by an attorney compared to about 81% of landlords, according to the National Coalition on the Civil Rights to Cancel. However, many evictions are never even challenged in court, according to John Polak, his staff attorney at the coalition. They just leave. If they try to fight alone, they will lose, and they know it, Polak said in an interview, adding, half of the people involved don't even go to court for something that can make them homeless, lose their children, lose their job. Even the filing of an eviction, regardless of the outcome in court, can remain on a tenant's record for years. The burdens of this crisis are extremely uneven. From 2012 to 2016, black tenants on average were served eviction notices from landlords at nearly twice the rate of white renters, and low-income black women were disproportionately targeted, according to the American Civil Liberties Union. Fortunately, Polak said, concerns about housing during the pandemic have amplified efforts in multiple cities to guarantee tenants the right to legal representation and set up eviction diversion programs that aim to resolve disputes between tenants and landlords with the goal of preventing an eviction hearing in court. Tenants' unions have also organized to collectively challenge landlords and fight evictions across the country. Washington State, Maryland, and Connecticut established right-to-counsel programs that provide legal counsel to tenants facing eviction based on income. And similar programs were recently established in New York City, San Francisco, Newark, Boulder, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Louisville, Kansas City, Minneapolis, Toledo, Seattle, Denver, and Cleveland, according to Polak. There are now 16 jurisprudences that have right to cancel. There were zero in 2017, Polak said. Other cities attempt to thwart an eviction crisis by passing new protections for renters, but Polak said these efforts suffer from enforcement problems. Often tenants have to file an affidavit of some kind. They don't know how to do it, and landlords can challenge it, Polak said, adding, in the cities that don't have a right to cancel, some of the eviction diversion programs and other efforts have helped, but sometimes they are hampered by the fact that there are no lawyers there to make sure that laws are actually followed. Even in cities where tenants have a right to counsel, the infrastructure behind many of the new programs is still being built. Polak said there are shortages of defense attorneys for tenants across the U.S. A federal moratorium on evictions was thrown out by the Supreme Court last August, and most local moratoriums have expired. Local courts are filing with tenants facing eviction, with in-person hearings replacing the onerous Zoom calls that previously slowed court proceedings and locked out defendants without internet access during pandemic lockdowns. Still, advocates know a right to counsel can keep many people in their homes. In New York City, 84% of tenants with legal representation stay in their homes. In Cleveland, 93% of represented tenants avoid an eviction or involuntary move, according to Polak. Many tenants are unable to appear in court due to work, family, and other obligations during daytime. In cities without a right to counsel, these tenants are often forced out of their homes without a chance to assert their rights. Legal representation from Right to Counsel programs instantly fixes that problem, with attorneys appearing in court and filing paperwork on behalf of tenants. Pollock said advocates are encouraging more law students to become tenants' attorneys in hopes of building a pipeline from graduate law schools to state and local programs that guarantee legal defense for tenants. Pollock said, "We view this as a cutting-edge civil rights fight, which it is. We view this as part of the fight for the right to housing."
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, avoiding bribery. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the importance of avoiding the bribery in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic teachings and when we look at the society, we see that there are many things in the society which are not good, which are forbidden, for example, or which are considered as bad actions in the society, and they have bad effects in the society. For example, some people, when they are at a specific post, when they have a status, when they have power, when they come into power, they start giving a favor to their relatives, to their friends, to the people they know, so that they can have more power in the society. So they use their powers for their personal desires, for their personal goals. And in these personal goals, obviously, the family is involved, the friends are involved, and then the one who has the ability or who is really proficient in some field, he is not getting the right job, he is not getting the right position, he cannot serve the society the way it should be. And instead, because we have favored someone else due to our personal relations, therefore, the person who does not deserve that status or that position comes on the position and he starts working. And therefore, we see that the society have corruption. So the corruption spread because of this. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the importance of avoiding bribery in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that in the society we see there are many people who give favor to their relatives, for example, to their friends, or maybe the people they know. And on the other hand, there are some people who take bribery. But Islam talks against taking the bribery. Islam is against bribery. Islam is against giving favor to your own people and ignoring the others, whereas this person who you're giving a favor does not have the ability of having that position. And there are some other people out there who are, for example, applying for a job, and they deserve that position and they're better than them. They have a good experience. But only because we have a personal relation for someone, or we are following our personal desires or personal goals, therefore we ignore all these. Even the person who takes bribery, he is also who is involved in the bribery. He is also ignoring the truth. He is ignoring the right candidate for a specific place. And he involves himself in an action which harms the society. Therefore, according to the Islam, the society has a big importance in our life. Society plays a big role in our life. And it is our duty to have a pure society, because when the society becomes pure, then the people who live in that society will go towards the perfection, towards the purification. And that's what we need to strive for, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
With pandemic restrictions eased, a huge rally was held in Toronto opposite the U.S. consulate on April 30, and participants then marched through the streets of Toronto to draw attention to the continued occupation of Al-Quds and Zionist brutalities against innocent Palestinians. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by the staff of Crescent International. This article is published under the heading, "The Streets of Toronto Reverberated with Sounds of Free, Free Palestine on Al-Quds Day Rally." Stay tuned for more. With pandemic restrictions eased, a huge rally was held in Toronto opposite the U.S. consulate on April 30, and participants then marched through the streets of Toronto to draw attention to the continued occupation of Al-Quds and Zionist brutalities against innocent Palestinians. There is another ritual that has become familiar. Pro-Israeli groups pressure on city officials and threats against the Quds Day rally participants. True to their violent nature, the Zionists have in the past attacked peaceful Quds Day participants, while Zionist organizations make false allegations of rally participants propagating hate. It is shocking that Toronto city officials parrot the nonsensical Zionist allegations against the Quds Day rally participants. If they bother to see who participates in these rallies, Muslims, Christians, and Jews, yes, members of the Jewish community who are anti-Zionist, they would know that the defamatory allegations pro-Israeli groups hurl at the Quds rally are totally false. This year's rally is assumed added significance because people looked forward to participating physically and to condemn Zionist brutalities against the Palestinian people. Rallies were held in all parts of the world, including several cities in North America. In Canada, where Toronto has traditionally had the singular honor of holding the largest rally in North America, this year several other Canadian cities also held their rallies. These included Ottawa, Calgary, Edmonton, and so on. In the U.S., Quds Day rallies were held in Washington, D.C., Chicago, Houston, and Los Angeles, among others. What is remarkable about the Quds Day rallies in North America is that they are attended by people of all faiths and no faith. There is also always a strong presence of members of the Jewish community that oppose the racist ideology of Zionism. Like last year, The Zionists in occupied Palestine attacked the holy sanctuary and barged into the Masjid al-Aqsa with their filthy boots. Tens of thousands of worshippers were prevented from praying inside the sacred mosque. Those inside the mosque were attacked with rubber bullets as well as tear gas. This year, the Zionists escalated their aggressive tactics by using drones to spray sewage water on Muslim worshippers. This reflects the Zionists' filthy minds. They know that sewage water is filthy, it stinks, and it pollutes the Muslims' clothes that renders their worship invalid. This is deliberate. The Zionist aims is to block Muslims from worshipping in Masjid al-Aqsa so that the Zionists can take it over. This is why Al-Quds matters to Muslims and why its complete liberation from the clutches of the Zionists is important. Al-Quds is the first Qibla of Muslims. Since the Zionist entity was illegally implanted in Palestine, trampling upon the rights of the indigenous Palestinian population, the Holy Land has had no peace. Indeed, the entire region has been engulfed in wars and bloodshed ever since. The Palestinians were not even consulted when their land was handed over to the Zionist marauders from Europe. This is what constitutes settler colonialism. The Zionists have repeatedly perpetrated genocide against the Palestinian people. This year, as Muslims were observing the month of Ramadan, Zionist gangs continued to trespass on the holy sanctuary in Al-Quds in violation of all norms of civilized behavior as well as against Judaic law. The Zionists, however, are not constrained by any law or morality. As alien invaders of Palestine, their mission is to steal the land of Palestinians. The fabricated regime of Israel is a colonial settler entity, like that of the European settlers in North America, Australia, and New Zealand. What makes the case of Palestine even more serious is the location of Masjid al-Aqsa in Al-Quds. Zionism is an evil ideology that all Muslims are obliged to oppose. Further, the Zionists' continued occupation of Al-Quds and deliberately provocative encroachments on the holy sanctuary are an affront to the sensitivities of all Muslims, regardless of where they reside. The Zionist entity must therefore be confronted by not only Muslims, but all fair and justice-minded people everywhere. Zionist injustice cannot be allowed to stand, it must be opposed and stopped. The suffering of the Palestinians, including women, children, and youth, and the indescribable cruelty of the heavily armed Zionists, whether soldiers or settlers, actually read that as illegal squatters, against the Palestinians, have aroused the concern of many people of conscience. This message has to spread more widely. Muslims, Christians, and Jews who participate in such rallies, especially in non-Muslim countries like those in Europe and North America, face the wrath of the regimes there. Even without the Quds Day rallies, Muslims face immense persecution and oppression. Islamophobia is running rampant in Europe and North America. Their claims to freedom of expression are a fraud. The Quds Day rallies are a great opportunity to expose their fraudulent claims to freedom, even if there is the ever-present danger of oppression and persecution. This is a price that has to be paid, because silence in the face of injustice is not an option. Standing up for truth and speaking out against injustice are fundamental obligations of all Muslims.
a diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales, Roundtable Discussions, Culture, Politics, all produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Eid al-Fitr, the Eid of struggling to form a unified Muslim nation. According to the works and statements of great religious personalities, one of the characteristics of Eid al-Fitr is that it is the Eid of the United Islamic Ummah. He is one who turned this day into an Eid for Muslims. It is the Eid of all Muslims. This means the outlook of the holy religion of Islam is towards building an Islamic Ummah. The same outlook exists in the teachings of the great Prophet of Islam. When we look at many Islamic teachings, we witness an effort for creating a united Ummah. Today, the Islamic Ummah is disintegrated. This disintegration does not mean differences between Islamic denominations. These differences are natural and they are not contrary to forming a united Ummah. Different beliefs and opinions can exist on major and minor issues alongside a united Ummah. What has separated Muslims from one another today is policies, political motivations, and motivations for seizing power. Muslim countries can pass through these motivations. This is the responsibility of political and influential personalities and those who have governmental positions in Islamic countries. If this happens, then a kind of power will emerge that is better than and superior to, in the real sense of the word, all transgressing and arrogant powers in the world. If this happens, no one will be able to bully an Islamic country. And no power will be able to blackmail Islamic countries and Muslim governments. If we stay together, if we pay attention to and focus on our common points, if hunger for power, selfishness, dependence, and corruption do not separate us from one another, then a power will be formed that can defend and support the rights and interests of 1.5 billion Muslims. But unfortunately, such a thing does not exist today.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The important point is that we should appreciate the value of such opportunities Allah the Exalted, made auspicious Eid al-Fitr a source of honor and dignity for the Islamic Ummah and for the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. You made it an Eid for the Muslims and for Muhammad, God's greetings be upon him and his household, and a source of honor and dignity and bounty. This is an instrument for increasing the dignity and honor and of the Islamic Ummah and the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. This depends on how we Muslims make use of such opportunities and occasions. The Muslim nations can use the month of Ramadan and Eid al-Fitr as an instrument to achieve glory and dignity. They can use them as a ladder to climb towards spiritual and material improvement and towards dignity in this world and in the next. We should be vigilant. We should use these opportunities.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Celebrated in France with hundreds of marches nationwide as leftists of all sorts united to celebrate equality, solidarity, and worker empowerment.
The 1st of May is the International Day for workers to get together and discuss how to defend themselves. It's seemingly the only day where workers mobilize for their rights worldwide, and we see how there are so many countries represented here. Today is more important than any election or particular movement.
In 2020 and 2021, May Day was muted due to the coronavirus pandemic. The celebration is back to full strength this year, and many marchers have an added reason to be politically active. The recent re-election of Emmanuel Macron following a campaign dominated by the far right. Economic stagnation, record inflation, a bitter election campaign with results few are genuinely happy about. Many believe some changes are coming for France. The French left is in the middle of perhaps a major reconstitution. The communists, greens, and socialists are deciding whether or not to join forces behind Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who finished third in the presidential race. Should they unite for the June legislative elections, they could deny Macron absolute control of parliament and thus drastically change his plans for his second term.
I can't recall the last time people felt they were actually voting for someone rather than voting to eliminate something. But not everyone here accepts this logic of reformism. We workers who produce the wealth need to prove an alternative to this system, like the yellow vests do, through consciousness and organization.
Unions, notably quiet during the presidential campaign, were out in big numbers, though far from records. Police, normally elbow-to-elbow with protesters at yellow vest demonstrations, gave marchers plenty of room, with few serious confrontations reported. May Day 2019 is often considered the end of the major yellow vest demonstrations. Hundreds of arrests, warrantless searches starting from a 150-kilometer radius around Paris, and massive police violence gutted the average person's willingness to join 6 months of enormous anti-government protests. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
People in the Gaza Strip mark this year's Eid al-Fitr holiday for the 16th time under the Israeli blockade. The joyful occasion comes at the end of the holy month of Ramadan. Traditionally, Muslims go to markets several days before Eid to buy gifts, new clothes, and sweets for their loved ones, but many here can't afford that because of the high unemployment and poverty rates. United Nations figures show that 80% of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have been relying on handouts in recent years in order to survive.
I'm having a very hard time while trying to buy new clothes for the holiday. I'm on a very tight budget, and I really don't know how to get through this holiday. There is hardly any money in Gaza, and the situation is only getting worse day after day.
For Gazan families, it has been a very tough task to buy Eid items for their children amid the harsh economic situation in the besieged coastal enclave. People scour the markets for hours to try and find affordable gifts for their families.
Most Gazans are broke and can't buy Eid items for their families. Gifts and clothes are very expensive, but we're determined to celebrate this holiday. The Israeli blockade and the last wars will not steal our joy.
For merchants, this Eid season has been one of the worst they had in years. Usually during holidays like Eid al-Fitr, sales are high in markets around the world. But in Gaza, shop owners complain of lack of sales.
This has been the most difficult economic condition in over a decade, and people lack the purchasing power. Most people come to the market just to look around, and they hardly buy anything because the economic situation here is very bad. Things are tough, but the spirit of Eid al-Fitr is here, and people will try to make the best of it.
Despite the harsh circumstances, Palestinians in Gaza are preparing themselves to receive Eid al-Fitr holiday like all Muslims around the world.
Eid celebrations in the besieged Gaza Strip will undoubtedly fall short of being full due to the ongoing Israeli blockade. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Russia's tensions with the West are threatening to quickly spiral out of control as the war in Ukraine drags on. Immediately after the start of the conflict on February 24th, the U.S. and its allies rushed to the aid of Ukraine. They've imposed sweeping sanctions against Moscow and provided Kiev with military and humanitarian assistance. The size of those shipments and sophistications of the weaponry have been increasingly growing. Besides that, U.S. State and Defense Secretaries recently traveled to Ukraine, promising more military aid.
They need long-range fires. You've heard them express a need for tanks. And we are doing everything that we can to get them the types of support, the types of artillery and munitions that will be effective in this stage of the fight. We're going to push as hard as we can, as quickly as we can, to get them what they need.
What I'm seeing, at least, is that aid is getting here and other distribution points. It's getting out the door incredibly quickly.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is the latest U.S. official to travel to Kiev. There, she promised Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky that more help is on the way. Pelosi was referring to a request by President Joe Biden from Congress to pass an aid package to Ukraine. The package is worth $33 billion, with almost two-thirds of it allocated to military aid. That aid includes everything from heavy artillery and armored vehicles to greater intelligence sharing, cyber warfare tools, as well as anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles. Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron, in a phone call with Zelensky, said Paris would step up military and humanitarian support to Ukraine. Those measures by the US and its allies have prompted strong warnings and criticism from Moscow. Russia says the military aid is not only fueling the conflict, but also boosting the risk of direct confrontation between Russia and NATO powers.
The tendency itself to pump weapons, including heavy weapons, to Ukraine and other countries is an action that threatens the security of the continent and provokes instability.
Yet more starkly, the Russian foreign minister has warned that the conflict in Ukraine risks escalating into a third world war. Sergei Lavrov says NATO is in essence engaged in a proxy war with Moscow by supplying Kiev with weapons. He has urged the US and NATO to stop sending weapons if they really want to resolve the Ukraine crisis.